Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, welcome everybody. Parshas Yisro 57:72. This is our sources year. Every year so far, Mirtz Hashem, we will have a source from our classic commentators. I'm sorry, this is the third time I'm quoting Ramban, Nachmanides. I hadn't planned on doing that. I wanted to try to have a new one each time, but what I really try to do at the beginning of each week is to think if I know any sources related to the Parsha that are just classics, you know, just real fundamental sources you just got to see. And so far, when I've asked myself that question, Ramban came up. So this is a collection of various excerpts of the Ramban's commentary on the Ten Commandments. Years ago, I probably shared some of these highlights in a Parsha class. It may have been some of you, but I think it is a classic. The question that this source is going to attempt to, or that I'm going to attempt to convey, is what are the criteria for being ranked among the Ten Commandments? Why? Because we know that there are more than Ten Commandments. And we know there's 613 commandments. And we also know that they're all equally from Hashem. And that there's no difference, really, as far as an observant Jew, between a mitzvah, whether it's on the two tablets or whether it's not on the two tablets. So it almost sounds like favoritism. Why in the world is God going to distinguish any commandments among any others? I'll tell you something very interesting that I once studied in the Talmud. There used to be a practice of reading the Ten Commandments daily after morning prayers. Some Siddurim, I think even the Art Scroll Siddur, actually prints them as extra readings, supplemental readings after the Shacharis. And that comes from a practice which was common in the days of the temples, that they would have a public reading of the Ten Commandments every day. But they discontinued that practice. Why? Because people in later generations started to think that those commandments were from Hashem and all the other ones were from the rabbis. And the rabbi said, that's bad PR. And we can't have them thinking that. So from now on, we're discontinuing the public reading of the Ten Commandments. So they kept it in the Siddur in case a person wants to do it on his own. But it is a misconception, and it is a distortion to think that these commandments are somehow more important. So therefore, it begs the question, why are they selected? Why are these commandments selected from all the others? And our hope is that by learning the Ramban, we will come to see, first of all, we will come to see that it's not Ten Commandments. That's a misnomer. The Hebrew is Aseret HaDibrot, the Ten Statements. If you do a tally of the number of actual commandments of the 613 that are included in this, because there's some longer ones, second one is long, the fourth one is long, you come out with 14 mitzvos. So it's not the 10 mitzvos, it's the 10 statements. So that's number one. Number two, the purpose of these statements is in some way to encapsulate all of the Torah. It's just that these 10 statements do that. So what our hope is, through the studying of the Ramban's commentary, we will get a glimpse of how it could be said that the 10 statements somehow encapsulate the entire Torah. If we can get to that point, we will have a much different understanding of what it means, the Aseret HaDibros. I think that's major, you know, to be able to mature in that thought, because the Ten Commandments is so proverbial almost. I once saw a pencil that says the Ten Commandments are not multiple choice. That was the inscription on the pencil. You know, so people have these the seven and ten. Yeah, I keep the Ten Commandments. So that's no. These are not Ten Commandments. These are 10 statements which encapsulate the entire Torah. The verse itself that we quoted is just the introduction. Chapter 20, verse 1, Hashem spoke all these statements, saying. And that is indeed the rendering of the translation of the word Dvarim by the art scroll. God spoke all these statements. Okay, so these are Dvarim, statements, not commandments. They are commandments, but there's not just 10 of them. Okay. So Ramban, as we've seen before, lived from 1194 to 1270. He lived most of his life in Spain. He spent several years, maybe 5 years or so, in Eretz Yisrael, where he passed away. We are blessed with Art Scroll's edition of the Ramban commentary. It's been translated, and I have pretty much copied from that and then just edited it to fit our needs. We will learn from the Ramban that the 10 statements combine to form an all-inclusive spectrum. Statement number 1, I am Hashem, your God. This statement constitutes a positive commandment. Yeah, I mean, one might have thought that it's just a statement of fact, but the Ramban says that it is a mitzvah. What's the mitzvah? Hashem said, I am Hashem, by which he instructed and commanded the Jewish people that they should know and believe that he exists and that he is their God who exists, who is the original being, and from whom everything else came about only through his volition and power. Okay, so all that is implied by I am Hashem. I'm not just telling you a fact that I want you to listen to. I'm telling you what you should accept. You should accept that I am Hashem, and that means all of these things. Your God is an additional directive. Your God, your master. That means they are also to believe that he is your God, meaning that they are obligated to serve him. There's something that you have to do. I am Hashem. You should accept that, and I am your God, I am your master, and I have things for you to do. That is so important. We sometimes have conversations about whether there is a God, whether there isn't God, and I do believe him, I don't believe him, as if it's an academic question. The Ten Commandments, the 10 statements, are establishing from ground zero, that it's not about believing in God, it's about believing in God, and therefore accepting him as your sovereign, as someone who has requirements of you.
I just want to be clear, that's two mitzvahs, to believe and serve?
No. I don't think any of the codifiers list this as two mitzvahs. So therefore, let's clarify it. The mitzvah is to accept God for who he is and for what that implies for me.
Okay.
It's an assumption of a mission.
Accept and serve.
Accept and serve. It's a one-step thing. It's not a theology. It's like enlist in the army. Uncle Sam needs you. Okay, God needs you to be in his army. That's what this means. Yes.
I would just relate it like to Shabbos, where it's got the two declarations in the same statement, that remembering and keeping it holy.
Mm-hmm. Two aspects of one mitzvah. Mm-hmm. Okay, good analogy. All right, statement number two. There shall not be to you other gods in my presence. Now, you could say, isn't that redundant? If I am Hashem implies he is their God who is, who exists, who is the original being, I mean, there's certainly an implication that there was none other. So why does he have to state explicitly, oh, and there's no other? It would seem redundant. And this is a major question among all the commentators. What is statement two adding to statement one? Let's see what the Ramban has to say about this. And I think he's making kind of different points. Why was this said? The omnipresent one said to Israel, I am Hashem your God, and then following that, you shall not have, etc. That is, he said to them, am I the one whose kingship you accepted upon yourself in Egypt? They said to him, yes. And I believe Ramban here is quoting Midrash. As it's as if there was this dialogue. Am I the one whose kingship you accepted upon yourself in Egypt? They said to him, yes. He then said, just as you accepted my kingship, accept my decrees, that is my commandments. And that is implied by the step one, step two. I have a little bit of a question on this because according to his first commentary on the statement number one, that was already implied in the words, your God. So I'm not sure if this is the Ramban's primary explanation or if he's just quoting a midrash that dramatizes this. So let's move on and see what else the Ramban says about this. And this is much more specific. Furthermore, in the second statement, Hashem prohibited us from accepting upon ourselves a Lord from among all the heavenly beings besides Him. Afterward, He said that we should not make any carved images in order to bow to them, or in order to worship them with any other manner of worship in the world. All of these verses are prohibitions against idol worship, and all of them involve the death penalty. Now this makes a lot of sense, because if you read the history of idol worship, it all started in the name of God. The early idol worshippers, writes Maimonides, believed in God and wanted to worship God and wanted to serve Him. It's just that they were having a hard time relating to an invisible being. And so they started to relate to His creations, like the sun and the moon and the stars. And they said, you know, we're still honoring God. We're just honoring God through the honor of His luminaries. But that, once they started with that, it started deteriorating to where they attributed powers to those luminaries. And so, step one is, I am Hashem your God, and everything that is implied. But step two is, but you must realize that you can't even engage in intermediary worship. Because while you may have good intentions, it's going to lead you into the complete denial of step one. So step two is indeed distinct, and it is protective of step one. Okay, any questions on that so far?
I was just going to comment that that's also, one's a positive mitzvah, one's a negative mitzvah. It's like, one's to serve, one's to not.
Right. And that's another, you know, very reasonable answer. Yeah. Okay. I don't think we've yet touched upon or grasped the overall idea here, which is that the Ramban in many writings, including the one that we studied in Parshas Bo, is a big fan of Hashem. But by that I mean, what we're going to see from the Ramban is that there's many ways you could approach Torah. You know, you could approach Torah like the convert was taught by Hillel. Start with the idea that you shouldn't do anything to other people that you don't want done to yourself. In other words, let's see Torah as a very, very human, compassionate, truthful way of living, interacting with people. You know, the God stuff is kind of like very abstract, very difficult for us to wrap our hands around. Let's focus on the justice and the mercy and the man to man. So the Ramban is very much theologically based. In fact, what we're going to see here is that it's quite the opposite. That Ramban sees all of the commandments, even those that are people based, as reinforcing the general idea of the Creator, of the unity of the Creator, and of that being our overall purpose of existence, which is what he stated in the Parsha of Bo, that we're all created here to come to Shul and to stand there and to say to God, you created us. So the Ramban is very, very much a God-based presentation of Torah. So that's kind of where we start to see the blending together of the different statements. So state number one and state number two is clearly about our perception of God. State number three ventures out a little more. You shall not take the name of Hashem your God in vain. This verse forbids us to swear by the glorious name of Hashem for no reason. It also states a prohibition against bearing upon his lips, a man, the glorious name of Hashem, even saying God's name for no reason, not just for an oath, but even saying God's name. The Torah positioned this statement after the prohibition of idolatry because just as it is fitting to fear the great and awesome God, by not giving his glory to others, by recognizing them as gods, so too is it fitting to give honor to his name. And one who takes his name in vain desecrates it. So, according to the Ramban then, the 10 statements began with just God, the way a person knows and accepts who God is. And the exclusivity of that. The next step is honor God even on your lips. Don't just keep it inside your mind and heart, but actually speak in a manner that brings honor to God. And refrain from desecrating his name in your speech. Statement number four. Remember the Shabbos day to sanctify it. After Hashem commanded in the first statement that we should believe in the unique God, who is the one who exists, who is the Creator, who is the Omniscient One and the Omnipotent One, and in the second statement, that we should exclusively direct belief in all these things and glory to Him alone, and in the third statement, that we should honor even the mention of His name by not uttering it in vain. That means we've taken our belief in God into our manner of speech. He commanded in his fourth statement that we should make a sign and a commemoration about this matter. What matter? The matter of God's existence and oneness and omnipotence on a regular basis to proclaim that he created everything. In other words, let's honor Hashem even more than just in our thoughts and on our lips. Let's honor Hashem in deed. Let's act it out. Let's do a Hashem play every week. It's the same idea, but being reinforced now into the realm of action. you see how the Ramban is painting a spectrum. He is not isolating these as just merely random commandments that are important. He is painting a mural, if you will. Statement number 5. Get ready for something which is quite profound. Now the Torah has completed everything that we are to do regarding matters of the Creator Himself and regarding His glory. Okay, we're finished. We've done everything we could have done. We've talked about how we believe in God, how we speak about God, and how we act for God. Now let's go on to something else. Let's venture out further. Now it changes the subject to give us something akin to a Creator for His offspring, acting as a partner in the formation of the child. Yes, Mom and Dad, you are godlike. Yes, your child is going to relate to God through you. Therefore, Hashem is saying, in effect, just as I have given you commands regarding my honor, so I am giving you a command regarding the honor of the ones who were my partner in creating you. I want people not just to honor me, I want people to honor my partners in creation. I want people to look, when they look at their parents, to see what a creator looks like, or a shadow of that creator. And if they can give honor to the shadow, they will be that much closer to giving honor to the Creator Himself. You know, the old joke, the young man became enamored by Orthodox Judaism, and he told his parents that he was going off to study in the yeshiva, and he was not going to pursue his career as planned. And when his father asked him, "Son, how are you going to support yourself?" he says, "God will provide." And the man goes home and tells his wife, "I've got good news and bad news. The bad news is our son's not finishing his degree. The good news is he thinks I'm God." It's an old one. It's a good one. But the idea here is that why did Hashem even create the world through the process of parents? I think the Ramban is saying clearly, parents is a step. Having parents and being commanded to honor them because of what they are for you, your creators, is a stepping stone to giving honor and discovering the great glory of the Creator Himself. Okay, Varda, excuse me.
So, just stepping back a little bit about Shabbos. It really goes back, I see it as relating to number one, because it's to remind us of God and to see His holiness. And so take that back to the first one, where it says He's making a declaration that He is holy, He birthed us, and that makes us holy.
Absolutely. I mean, all of this goes back to number one. According to the Ramban, number one is the raison d'etre. Come and discover God. All the other ones are different. It's a spectrum, like number one is like the white light, and the other ones are like the spectrum of colors that make up that light through various levels of our being, through our thoughts, through our mouth, our speech, through our actions. And now even relationships are there to bring us back to God. I probably have told you this before. I don't see how a person can be any more respectful or religious with God than he is with his own parents. I don't see how one could be separated from the other. You know, it's almost like this is the intermediary step. If you can pass this, then you can see the bigger picture. But I don't think it's possible to be disrespectful of parents and then at the same time claim to be religious.
If they can't accept their parents' laws, they'll never accept the Supreme Court.
Right. And if they're acting as though they are, and then it's probably just external. There's that, you know, that word again, external, internal. It's something that you're going through the motions. Maybe you're trying to make a point. Maybe you've got some type of self-serving motive to doing it. But in truth, if you look at the internality of it, how can a person be any more religious with his God than he is respectful of his parents? It just doesn't seem. All right, let's move on because we're not so far from the end, and then we'll entertain all the comments. Number six. We're going even further, but continuing the same idea. You shall not murder. Hashem was saying, in effect, see, I have commanded you, in the first statement, the Ramban is constantly trying to keep them all together. I have commanded you in the first four statements to acknowledge in heart and in deed that I am the creator of everything, and in the fifth command statement to give honor to parents because they are partners in the formation of the child. This being the case, take care lest you cause injury to the rest of my handiwork by spilling the blood of a man whom I created for my glory and for acknowledging me in all these things. If you think about it, how can you be any more respectful of God than you are of his creations? You're respectful of God, and yet you spit on God's creature next to you on the street? How could that be? Who made him? Why did he make him? He made him so that he could praise the glory of God, and you're spitting on him? And how can you say that you respect God? So, this takes it even further. Not just your parents are that intermediary, but every living creature on the street. If they are in the image of God, then your true level of honor of God depends on the way that you honor people. Certainly, to murder them, to say they don't count, then you're saying Hashem doesn't count. Okay, statement number seven. This one is just mind-boggling. The Ramban, the Ramban has a one-track mind. Everything he's thinking about is God. So, when he sees you shall not commit adultery with your fellow man's wife, you know what he's worried about? What do you think he's worried about? Is he worried about immorality? Is he worried about breaking apart marriages? What is he worried about? He's worried about the following. For you will thus be causing damage to the matter of honoring parents for the children born of such a union, causing them to deny the truth and to profess a falsehood. For such children will not know their true father and will give their honor to someone else, just as those who commit idolatry do. This is totally, totally on a different wavelength. You know what the Ramban is worried about with idolatry? He's worried about a child being born that will grow up not with his father, and how damaging that will be to his religiosity. Because by not having a father, he cannot discover Hashem. That's what the Ramban is worried about. One-track mind. But according to the Ramban, Hashem has a one-track mind. That's why he created us in this world and gave us all of these things to do, because all of these things together are going to lead us to the path of finding him. And the same thing, you shall not steal, which the sages, this is already, you know, oral tradition, this is not the Ramban's idea, that refers to the kidnapping of a person. And he's worried about the same thing. What if you kidnap a child? He who does should say so, causes a situation similar to that of the adulterer. That is, one who kidnaps children causes them to violate the fifth statement because the victims will ultimately not know who their parents are. One-track mind. All he cares about is that people are not going to have parents and are therefore not going to be able to find God. Okay? And statements 9 and 10, you shall not bear false witness against your fellow, you shall not covet your fellow's house. Thus the Torah has completed everything that a person is obligated to do regarding his fellow. How is this everything? Because just as we branched out from God, honoring God by our thoughts, to honoring God in our speech and in our action, the same thing is true in our relationship with other people who are God's creations. That is, we should not murder them, right? But we also shouldn't speak falsely about them, and we shouldn't even think ill about them or be deviously covetous of them. In other words, they are sacred. Every single person is sacred. Every single person is in the image of God, and they are not to be tampered with, and they are not to be dominated by any other creature of God. Remember that Miriam Adahan's Egypt mentality, that it's you're either the master or you're the slave. The Ten Commandments, it says, no, none of the above. We're all in the image of God, and we all see one another as being created only for that purpose. 10 statements, they're not 10 commandments. They are 10 statements that encompass every single thing in the Torah and the purpose of everything in the Torah. The purpose of everything in the Torah is by the myriad interactions and experiences that we have throughout life, 24/7, for 120 years, are there to reinforce that ultimate purpose of proclaiming, okay, God, I get it. You are the one, and I have tried throughout my life and everything that I have done just to reinforce that more and more. And that's the 10 statements according to Ramban. Let's start with Lenore, because she had her hand up before, and then Varda.
In part, statement 5 then relates to the later statement. You were saying that if you don't honor your one or both of your parents, then you can't find God or honor God.
That's what I said.
But what if one of your parents is not honor worthy, and you know it as a young child, and yet you still seek God?
Well, when we say, and I've heard this question before, when we say that our parents aren't honor worthy, perhaps we're not looking at the reason why we honor them. If you say that we honor our parents because all of the good things they did for me, then you can say, well, they didn't do such good things for me, and therefore they're not honor worthy. But that's not the Torah's reason for why we honor our parents. We honor our parents because they created us. And everyone's parents created us, whether they acted nicely or not. And that's the part of our parents that we're honoring. And the Talmud says, and the Talmud relates a story of one of the Talmudic sages whose parents disgraced the child in public. After they were already a world-famous Torah teacher, the mother would come over to the son in the middle of his lectures and do crazy things. One time she took a money bag out of his pocket and threw it into the river while he was speaking. So the Talmud says, what are you supposed to do in that case? So the Talmud says, just remain quiet and think about the one who commanded you to honor them. Which really means it's ultimately about Hashem. And Hashem created you through the agency of your parents, And if you like yourself, then you want to honor your parents for giving you life. But I don't know if we would know that if we didn't learn about it through the Torah. We may assume that we're supposed, that honoring parents is some type of a, you know, tit for tat, thanks mom, thanks for all the support, thanks for, you know, paying my college tuition, and thanks for always making me a birthday party and that kind of thing, and I just want to repay you in some way. But the Torah is saying that's not at the root. If it would, it would not, perhaps, arguably not be in the Ten Statements. If it's on the Ten Statements, that means that it is a major, major vehicle for bringing us to the point of I am Hashem. Okay, Varda, and then Doctor. Yeah.
This is just so beautiful, and I know this is what you said, but I'm gonna just phrase it a little bit differently. That when you got down towards the end, I clearly see how it all goes back to the first one,
mm-hmm.
because now it's saying when we step away from. Now we're also prey to any kind of idolatry that
mm-hmm.
exists in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So then we lose sight completely of God, or we put ourselves in that place of vulnerability. And goes back when you said about the Ramban. What I keep thinking is, and I hear it, and you said this ain't owed milvado.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it really mm-hmm. stays with me. So when we look at God, He is the Father,
mm-hmm.
and Torah is our mother.
Mm-hmm.
So to honor, even though God afflicts us,
mm-hmm.
it's all here for a reason
mm-hmm.
and a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And she becomes the fence and the boundary of protection
mm-hmm.
for us.
Mm-hmm.
So between that marriage, we're pretty well covered.
Stay at home.
Yep.
Stay at home under their wing.
Yep.
Very nice. Very nice. Dr. Brownstein?
Well, first of all, hooray for Nachmanides and Menachem.
Nasha.
Very nice.
Thank you.
In answer to Lenore's thing, you know, this love, honor, and obey. You know, you can honor your parents. You have to love them. You have to obey them. I think that's in the marriage vows. You know, it used to be in the marriage vows. Love, honor, obey. That's it. I do. But you have to honor them. And that's true. I was taught that's the reason number five comes after number four is because if your parents say don't observe
that's
the
right.
Sabbath,
that's right.
You can't follow them.
Uh-huh.
Number four comes first.
Or mm-hmm. murder.
Uh-huh.
Right. The other thing was that in the Ten Commandments, the Christians have a different Ten Commandments than the Jews.
Really?
They mm-hmm. do not take the first commandment, Anochi, as a commandment at all. It's sort of like an introduction. But what Nachmanides is saying is that the number one commandment, Anochi Adonai, I am your God, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. And the way the Jews break it down, the way I learned it, of course, was the first five are to God, and the second five
man.
Are to man.
Mm-hmm. And parents are the transgressors.
But
oh.
in answer to what you had said about whether there was a different counting, there's a different way of counting. The Christians have a different way of counting. They split up number 9 and 10. I hate to be too wordy on this. It seems like, did you abridge this or something?
Mm.
Because it seems like the first ones are big, and then all of a sudden everything gets collapsed down. 8, 9, and 10 are very small.
Yeah, I was surprised too. I didn't remember the Ramban's wording. I didn't cut it down too much. I think that when he gets to 9 and 10, he kind of just like finishes it off. He says, thus the Torah has completed everything that a person is obligated to do regarding his fellow.
And 10 is a tough one, because 9, I can see, don't lie. But 10, how can somebody tell you how to feel or think?
Well,
you can't tell somebody, well, don't covet. You do covet, you know.
That's similar. What?
It's
yeah.
Telling the way you think.
But I think we have to, and I know you want to say something, we have to go back to what we said to Lenore. You know, why are we not supposed to covet someone else? So if you just say something psychological like, well, it won't get you anywhere. Well, you're just going to be always unsatisfied and looking for, you know, that you're right. that may not cut it. I have these feelings. If you frame everything in the sense of, I am Hashem, your God. I created everything. I created people as each one little sparks that has a soul, and each individual person is revealing some of my glory. And every one of you is a member of my, if you will, my orchestra. And each one of you has an instrument to play. And the violinist has to play the violin and not looking over the shoulder and say, I wish I could play the oboe. You know, each person has what they need for their mission. Keep your eye on the mission. Realize that what you have is what you need. What they have is what they need. You don't need what they need. If you frame it in that way, then it's a totally different conversation.
Yeah, one last thing, and I won't say another word.
Bli neder.
We're not supposed to say that.
Yeah, bli neder, without a vow.
I'm telling you not to feel different ways. Yeah. How can they tell you not to covet? Don't we say something every day like v'yahavta, you know, that you should love God? How can they tell you to love? Either you do or you don't. You know, you can't make somebody love someone else or command them to do so. Either you love them or you don't. I won't say another word.
That's the commentaries discuss that on the mitzvah of love your neighbor as yourself. Yeah. Okay.
Shlomo. Well, first of all, I'm still trying to do the math to get 14 mitzvahs. I still have 7.
Oh, I didn't list them all because in number 2 it talks about
different ones. Remember the Shabbat to sanctify it.
No, I think Varda was right about that one. I think it's number 2. I did not quote the whole thing.
Okay.
You know, it talks about don't make idols, don't have idols, don't bow to idols.
So the second
it's a whole bunch of them in there.
In the second one.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's fine. And then
it could be. It could be a positive and a negative. It says, remember the Shabbos day, and then do not do malacha. There may be two in Shabbos. That's right. Not the Shamar v'Zachor.
No, my main comment is on coveting, because that is, I call that the psychology one, for sure.
Right.
I mean, that is it's psychology. I actually call that the optimism commandment, because in psychology we teach the concept of relative deprivation. You can compare up and you can compare down. If you make $50,000 and compare it to Bill Gates, you're going to be depressed and upset.
Uh-huh.
And if you make $50,000 and compare that to everyone else on the planet, you're in the top 1% of the world.
Uh-huh.
So it is the whole optimism pessimism thing. And I think that's the danger. Also, thought leads to action, leads to worse crimes.
Like
I look at that as by coveting your neighbor's possessions, that could be the beginning. Well, maybe I should steal from him.
Mm-hmm.
It could lead to a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
But it's this whole idea, you got to keep an optimistic frame of mind at all times, because that's what really you need to serve God. And pessimism leads to more negative things and other negative commandments.
Very good. By the way, some commentators say that you're only in violation of coveting if you go the next step beyond the thought, which is you start to... You start pressuring them, like you say, "How much will you take for that house? I'm going to buy your house, and I'm not selling. Yeah, but I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse." And you come back day after day. Once you start doing that, then you're coveting. Many commentators say that it's more than just the thought. But the point that we could make also about this is, once again, to take it in a vacuum, just to plop somebody down and say, "Don't covet," without any context, I don't think we're armed with enough fortitude to do that. But if you that's the beauty of the 10 statements as a whole. If we teach that there's a specific purpose about this, and it ends in that, that's a different conversation. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
No. Oh, I just wanted to, you say some commentators say that about coveting, but. But many of them say that it's in the mind.
Even in the mind, yeah.
Don't they?
Yeah.
Because you can just sit here. I know, God, that if you had two of something, even if it was a malady, he would want one of them. You know, really, because he's so covetous of that person in general.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think in the mind is the...
It's everyone agrees that it's a bad mida, you know, kina, jealousy.
Yeah,
but the question is, did you violate? I think that this might even be like a death penalty. So you haven't violated the 10th commandment until you take the steps. But that's not to say that, sure, go ahead and be jealous as much as you want. For sure, it's a bad thing. I think that they're just talking about if it's in violation of this. Dr. Fried.
I understand, and I think I started thinking about this around murder. And we honor our fellow man because they are God's creation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have a little trouble with that, though, when it comes to the political leaders today. It's the political leaders of Iran. How do I honor whatever his name is?
Do you know that I had do not kill. I had do not kill on here, and then I showed this to somebody, and they said do not murder.
Right.
Yeah.
What if somebody breaks into your house with a gun?
That's right.
Do you not kill him? Mm-hmm. You do kill him.
Yeah.
If somebody is a rodef, if somebody is a pursuer, and he is out to kill someone, you kill them first. That's not called murdering. That's called saving life.
But this is the first time I've seen in the Humash, it says you shall not kill.
So let's translate as murder. That's why I changed the word.
It's Retzach versus Haraga.
Yeah,
I mean,
Haraga is to kill, but Retzach is murder.
It says in the Chumash that if somebody, it's hard to see it, but the Talmud explains, if somebody breaks into your house with intent to kill, you should kill him first. Mm-hmm. That's not called murder. It says that somewhere else.
Right. I mean, lying is bad, but they do say...
Yivar sheker tircha. Distance yourself from falsehood.
Right. A lot of people do loosely interpret that
okay.
Obviously thou shalt not lie, and that they're being very technical, that when they're establishing truth in a court.
Yeah. It's, and same thing with do not steal.
It's basically...
According to the sages, this is specifically kidnapping.
Right.
stealing money is a different commandment in Vayikra.
Yeah.
So these are the principles. Yeah.
There's one other thing with the honor thy father and mother, and I stretch this a little bit to being in the Parsha Yitro, because Yitro says to Moses, get your judges and lower people and establish a judicial court, the judicial system, and here God is saying, honor your mother and father, because they are my partners.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing my work in creating you.
Mm-hmm.
I created them. You can, you know, on and on and on. They're doing the work of creation.
I see. Kind of
stretching
the hierarchy, the structure. Yes, very good. Yep. Did you hear about the kidnapping in this neighborhood?
No.
It was only for about 2 hours, then he woke up.
I was a kid napping.
Oh my goodness.
Have a good Shabbos, Rabbi.
You can strike that from the list. Yes,
no, I'm going to leave it in.
You should stand up when your grandparents come into the room, or when your teacher comes into the room.
We have to look at this. It's supposed to be construed as an women action too. Word or something that's passive. So when you said about loving and how do you know, how can you force yourself to love? I think what the Torah is actually saying, and look at love as an action word, and it means don't treat someone how you wouldn't want to be treated.
And when
I look at covet, I see that more as a passive, where somebody they're lusting their mind for something that they don't have, or even if it's something that they do have, and I mean, it can be an addictive thing.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.